it's a playoff field for them. I mean, I'm sure they fight for something. We fight for something, man. Once you get late in the year, man, all these games is crucial. They become more important week after week. It don't mean more, but the atmosphere is just different. You know, you're the only game on TV, real rowdy atmosphere in us. It's a stage game, man. So you're on that stage, man. So you always want to play well on that stage.
All right. Thanks for joining us on the DenverBroncos.com podcast again this week. The Broncos wrapped up the AFC West with a win over the Chargers on the road. So we're going to nix the AFC West rundown from here on out. Not a whole lot to discuss going forward. Chargers in the race for a wild card spot, but they'd have to win out pretty much and get a lot of things going their way. So instead, we have our correspondents, Warren Jusi, David Deschant, here to discuss a little bit of what's going on around the league. I'd like to start off with the Patriots. Naturally, with the Broncos, we've been looking for them to show some kind of weakness that and maybe get another loss that would catapult the Broncos into that top spot in the AFC. But the Patriots have just been getting a lot of breaks. They didn't look like that dominant team that they could be against the Dolphins, but the scores certainly showed otherwise.
Yeah, it was pretty close early on. We were watching in the press box in San Diego, and I think it was 14-13 at the half, and then they really pulled away in the third and fourth quarters. And the Patriots definitely got it going. I mean, the Dolphins are not an easy team, and they still came away with a very convincing win. And I'm sure the Broncos are going to be pulling for the Jets this weekend, and pulling for that loss because, yeah, if the Patriots win out, they will get that home field advantage, and the Broncos certainly don't want to go back to Foxborough.
Yeah, I mean, talking about the Dolphins game last week, the Patriots really just annihilated the Dolphins in the second half. They sort of turned it on. Brady and Gronkowski connected for three huge plays, and that was kind of that. But really, the Patriots struggled early in that game. They scored a touchdown off of a blocked field goal, which is fairly fluky, and the Dolphins dropped a deep touchdown pass to Damian Williams, I believe, the running back, on a sort of wheel route, and he just right through his hands. It's still to be a one-point game at half. That was fairly deceiving. The Dolphins had outplayed them, but the Patriots just ran away in the second half, and they've been playing that well lately. And when they're getting breaks and those sorts of things, they're really tough to beat. So, with two division opponents left, the Jets, and then they'll host the Bills in Week 17. It looks like they'll probably get home field advantage in the playoffs, unless something surprising happens.
All it takes is one slip up. Jets certainly looks like they're not a team that you might lose to as a top conference team.
Yeah, but you might hope for a sort of Rex Ryan kitchen sink game, you know? I mean, this guy, Rex, he's hounded the Patriots over the years. Every now and then he comes up with a game plan that messes with them. So, sure, it's not likely, but, you know, this is probably his second to last game as head coach of the Jets, so maybe he throws everything at him.
Speaking of the Bills, who the Patriots will play in Week 17, Bills kind of got a little bit of a shocking win against taking down the team who had last beat the Patriots and the Packers. Obviously, that was a really close game. Looked like the Packers just needed one more play. They could have gotten a very long touchdown, but that game just slipped out of their hands.
Yeah, I mean, they were certainly pass-heavy in this game, and we saw 2 weeks ago when the Broncos played the Bills that the Broncos really honored that defensive front, that pass rush, and didn't want to get into a drop-back game. They ran the ball a lot, even though they weren't having a ton of success. They were converting, first downs and short yardage, and, that worked, but still they didn't run up the score on the Bills by any means. And the Packers in this game, they had drops. The Bills' corners were having great coverage, and Jordy Nelson dropped a 95-yard touchdown pass, which always helps if you're the defense. But really, they took it to him in this game.
Yeah, Jordy's on my fantasy team, so that was pretty disappointing for me. But, the Broncos know the Bills have a really good defense. And, it was Aaron Rodgers' worst game of his career, wasn't it? Or something like
worst
that.
Worst by passer rating, I'm pretty sure. I think he went 17 of 42 for something like 180 yards. He had two interceptions. Now, that's a little deceiving. One of them was a great play. Bakari Rambo kind of undercut Randall Cobb. The second one, Rambo was the recipient of a tip, frankly, it was pass interference on the initial
pass.
I think Jarrett Boykin was the intended receiver, and he got mauled before the pass got there. Rodgers was not happy, but still, two picks of Aaron Rodgers that was 50% of his total coming into the game for the year.
It's kind of an interesting game to look at in the box score. Rodgers throws 42 times, completes only 17 of those. As you said, just a pretty terrible game, 185 yards. But it looks like their rushing game was all right. I mean, 97 yards on the ground. You look at the Bills, I mean, what? Kyle Orton gets 150 yards passing, and Fred Jackson gets 71 yards. It's not like they were torching him up and down the field to get this win.
Not at all. The Bills' offense was not good. But I was really surprised to see the Packers not continue to run the ball. They were getting huge chunks. Yeah. Eddie Lacy was flying up the field and, you know, 10, 12 yards untouched to the second level constantly. So I was very surprised they didn't stick with that.
Yeah, definitely. I know it was shocking considering how good the Bills' defensive front is. I mean, yeah, he definitely put on a show. And I guess maybe it's hard to keep the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands when he's your quarterback. Yeah. But, yeah, that did not seem to be the ideal game plan in that situation. But, yeah, it worked out for the Bills.
Yeah, and frankly, the Packers' offensive line deserves a ton of credit for not only opening up those holes in the run game, but really for how poorly Rodgers played. There wasn't that much pressure on him. They played fine. It was the coverage that was the bigger problem. So that Packers offensive line kind of looked like it was in shambles in week one and against the Seahawks, and they had injuries already, and they've really turned it around. So,
and one other thing I want to discuss about this this past week before we look into some games coming up this weekend is the Bears deciding to bench Jay Cutler in favor of Jimmy Clausen. I don't remember the last time Clausen started, but I imagine it was when he was playing for the Panthers the season before they got Cam, which was a great season from my memory.
John Fox's last season.
I remember watching those games in my dorm room, and they weren't a whole lot of fun. that was the Brian St. Pierre year. Matt Moore was playing for him. It was just not
2014, I think.
Yeah.
I saw this crazy stat this morning on Twitter. It was something like Jay Cutler is making more than Andrew Luck, Russell Wilson, Mark Sanchez, someone else combined this season.
Combined?
He's making $22.5 million this season. And, I mean, I can't say – I mean, I don't know if he deserves to be benched or not, but I don't think he's getting too much help, but –
it seems like something else. I don't know. There's just the whole situation is just
It's just messy.
Like a nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his contract isn't structured the way that Colin Kaepernick's or Andy Dalton's is, where you can kind of get out of it year to year. It's $54 million over 3 years guaranteed, and frankly, it was surprising they signed the deal with him so early in the offseason. They didn't. You know, you saw, for example, with Joe Flacco got his extension after they won the Super Bowl. Usually teams will wait and, you know, negotiate and have the leverage and all that, but they made that decision really early. And at the time, I remember looking at it as Mark Trestman has shown what he can do with Cutler and with McCown. Give him his choice of a quarterback. If it's going to be Cutler, great, and trust him. But clearly it hasn't worked this year. Cutler is no different than he's ever been, perhaps worse, and boy, they're in a pickle now.
I tend to wonder if Clausen's going to be any different than what he was. I mean, I haven't seen him play in so long, but there was no indication from that season that he should go on as a starting quarterback.
Yeah, I think I saw on ESPN yesterday that Clausen has the lowest QBR since 2009 or 2008 of any quarterback with at least 300 pass attempts. I think he has already a -4 interception to touchdown ratio. It's not good.
He threw 3 touchdowns and 9 interceptions that
minus
season.
-6.
Yeah.
There you go.
It was bad. Yep. He went a stretch of like 6 games without a touchdown.
Sure. And the other thing about Clausen is at the start of the year when they signed him, people actually, you know, the impression of Mark Trestman was that he's a quarterback whisperer. Hey, this is a great idea. Get a guy who's talented, who never panned out. Maybe he'll become a useful player. Well, we're going to find out. I mean, obviously, Trestman hasn't done enough with Cutler, but you might as well see what you have at this point. I don't think you can hurt Cutler's ego too much by benching him. So 2 games with Jimmy Clausen, sure, why not?
I remember going into that, I guess it was either the preseason Cam's first year or the preseason of, it had to be before Cam had started his first regular season, because Cam exploded out of the gate so well. And so I don't know what it is about the Panthers fan base. Maybe it's just fan bases in general. But it was like the second preseason game, and they're like, Clawson needs to be starting. Cam is not showing anything. And it's like, this is the second game of preseason. Clawson hasn't really shown like that. He's like torching defenses out here.
Yeah, I mean, he was not good, Clawson, in his only season. So, I mean, when you draft a guy near the first round like they did Clawson, then you come back and get the first overall pick and you take a quarterback that says you don't care too much about the guy you drafted the year before.
Very good point.
But let's leave that behind real quick and get to our games this coming weekend. We'll make a few picks here for the bigger ones. No offense to Washington or some of the worst teams, but we're not going to pick those. We're not going to pick the Thursday night Titans-Jaguars game. I guess one of the first meaningful games that this weekend we'll have is Chiefs and Steelers. Kansas City fell behind in the AFC West after leading it, well, tying for the lead very briefly, and the Steelers are in that wild card spot. Who do you think comes out in this one? I feel like the Chiefs just really haven't shown me a whole lot in the past month or so. Their offense doesn't really string together explosive drives that can turn games, that kind of take momentum. If they get something pushing as far as the running game, then they can kind of string out those games. But I feel like the Steelers have just shown a lot more in just in their facets of their offense and their defense.
Has a Chiefs wide receiver scored a touchdown yet?
Nope.
No, I didn't think so. Mm-mm. I'm going with the Steelers on this one. I think they need the win more, and I have the Chiefs just have not shown me very much in recent weeks for sure.
Plus, I think the Steelers are at home, so.
Yeah, but the Steelers have been probably the most Jekyll and Hyde team in the NFL this year. I mean, they've lost to the Jets and to the Bucks, and they've lost to the Saints at home, and they've had resounding victories over the Bengals and Ravens even. You just have no idea what to expect from them. I guess breaking it down by the matchup, I would say I think Kansas City's offense is going to be able to move the ball and have that sort of ball control that Andy Reid often gets. Even though they don't use their receivers much, I think they could control the clock in this game. And then hopefully, if you're the Chiefs, I mean, you'd like to think that your pass defense is the strongest part of your team, and it very well may be.
But their rushing defense is the league worst, and you have Le'Veon Bell.
Sure, but you also hope that, you know, maybe the Steelers commit to the passing game like they did last week. Frankly, the Falcons have a terrible run defense, and the Steelers couldn't run on them very much. They used Le'Veon Bell a lot in the passing game, but I don't know. I kind of like the matchup for the Chiefs in this one. The funny thing about this is that the Chiefs are sort of granted an opportunity to get back in the wild card chase because they're playing a team that's ahead of them. They won't be able to get back, you know, against Cincinnati or Baltimore, but this could be a big one. This could give them a chance if they were to win out. They play the Steelers this week, obviously, and then they get the Chargers next week at home. So two wins might be enough for the playoffs.
Obviously, one of the most debated division races, the NFC South. That's not because they're all good or anything, but they're more just a laughingstock. Big divisional game here between the Falcons and the Saints. Saints are number one. Panthers are number two because they have that tie. The Panthers play the Browns. Not an easy game, but Johnny Football didn't exactly have a great showing. But we're focusing on the Falcons and Saints here. This game could kind of reshuffle the division standings. Saints are at home, but that hasn't been exactly any kind of indicator with the Panthers coming in and stomping them for a huge, huge blowout. I think I'm going to go with the Falcons.
I really have no idea.
Yeah, I don't really know either.
You don't know what to expect from these teams.
Yeah, I really don't know. Maybe about a month ago, I would say for sure the Saints, if they're playing at home, but obviously that's pretty – that is not a signifier of how well they're going to play. But, I mean – I'm going to go with the Saints in this one. I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, they specifically have been so up and down, it's hard to say. The Falcons have actually been relatively consistent. They've come close to beating some good teams. Yeah, they have beaten some solid teams. They just are often crippled by Mike Smith's bad, you know, handling of the clock and things like that late. But the funny thing about this game is that basically – if the Saints win, they're in the driver's seat for the NFC South. Right. But if the Saints lose, the Panthers really come into the picture because they play the Falcons next week. That game is in Atlanta, but the winner of that game would then probably win the NFC South if the Falcons were to beat the Saints here. I have to lean towards the Saints. I'm terrified of that offense, especially against a defense that – can't stop the run. You know, they've pounded Mark Ingram a little bit this year at times. Only has one good corner in Desmond Trufant. Everybody else is sort of lackluster and can be exploited. So, I don't know. Maybe Rob Ryan can pull together a tough defense for the Falcons. But I'm personally hoping for a very high-scoring game because I have Matt Ryan and Drew Brees, and Mark Ingram and Kenny Stills in fantasy the championship week this week. So hopefully we'll get this one up in the 40s.
You had to drop the championship.
I had to do it.
And next up we have Dallas playing at home, taking on the Indianapolis Colts. Both teams sit at 10-4. It should be a good one, one of the better matchups of the day. This one's hard to pick. Both teams have been playing really well. Dallas's most recent loss is to Philadelphia, and then they beat Philadelphia a couple weeks later. Indianapolis has won four straight after losing to New England, where they got kind of stomped in that one, but they've rebounded well. This one's not an easy one to pick. You also have DeMarco Murray coming off his hand surgery. They think he'll play, but you kind of wonder how effective he'll be. For me, I don't know. I tend to go with the Colts here, but I could be persuaded either way.
I think I'm going to go with you on the Colts, too. I think especially if DeMarco Murray's out. You know, Chuck Pagano made a good point, though. He said that even if Murray's out for this game, he called Dez Bryant a nightmare and said that, you know, the Cowboys' offense isn't just about DeMarco Murray. But I do think that the Colts are riding a good streak right now, and I think that they are pretty determined to keep it get a playoff spot. So I think that the Colts are going to pull this one out, even though it's in Dallas. And I think even if DeMarco Murray plays, I think that the Colts will win this game.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that even though it's in Dallas, well, you know, the Cowboys have been 3-4 there this year. They're undefeated, 7-0 on the road. So it seems to be more of a sample size thing probably than anything else. But, you know, I agree with you guys. I think the Colts are the better team here. DeMarco Murray might only be able to carry the football with his right hand, which would certainly open up a slight chance for more turnovers if he plays, if he can't switch the outside hand when he's near a tackler. One other thing is Vontae Davis has been terrific this year. He's been one of the best corners in the league, and he's really shut down opposing number ones. That could be tough for Dez Bryant. That matchup would be pretty important. But overall, the Colts' passing defense has been excellent. So if Murray is affected at all, or if Zach Martin and his ankle injury doesn't heal too well, we could see, you know, the Dallas offense struggling. On the other side, I just can't see that Dallas defense really affecting the Colts too much. They've been humming on offense. Andrew Luck is practically unstoppable at times. We know that Dallas doesn't have a great pass rush, which is the biggest thing you need against a good quarterback. And, you know, they've played fine this year. Rod Marinelli has put together a good group, but it's hard to have faith in them against this sort of weaponry.
And how about that article in the Wall Street Journal the other day about Luck just being over-congratulatory, I guess is the best way to put it. I bet that's pretty frustrating for opponents. You kind of want them to be mad at you, right? I mean, you don't want them to be like, you know, that was an awesome hit. Thanks for hitting me, bro. Like, good job there.
Yeah, several of the players quoted in the article, you know, they like playing Cutler or Rivers because Rivers are and Cutler well, get you know, mad at their lines.
Yeah, you know you're getting to them.
Exactly. They react to it. And, you know, I was watching some sound effects videos on NFL.com last night of Andrew Luck, and he gets hit, and you know, Terrell Suggs flattens him and gets back up. He goes, nice hit, big boy. And, you know, Suggs like, you all right? He's like, oh, yeah, it's just football. You know what I mean? You know, but it's easy for him to say that. He's 240 pounds. He's an absolute tank. His first 2 years in the league, he was hit more than any other quarterback in the league by a long shot. Didn't take as many sacks because he usually gets rid of the ball, but just in terms of knockdowns. But he hasn't shown any signs of wear and tear. He is indestructible. The guy is as big as any person who gets tackled on a regular basis in the NFL, except for maybe tight ends and like Kelvin Benjamin-sized receivers. That's about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, he's a tough guy. And, yeah, it's funny. Like, it was DeMarcus Ware that was saying that Philip Rivers does something pretty similar and it would get under his skin. Like, Philip Rivers would say, like, good hit. Did he say that Philip Rivers was sarcastic in that way? But I can't really recall the context. But it bothered him, though.
I think Rivers is more combative.
Yeah.
I think Rivers, he just loves trash talking. He just doesn't do it with swear words.
Andrew Luck's just sincere about it. Like, it's a good hit.
Yeah.
I think Andrew Luck appreciates good football. So
maybe he's just a nice boy.
I'd say so.
And our last game here that we have to pick is Seattle and Arizona. Mm-hmm. I think Arizona's already clinched a playoff spot. I don't think they've clinched the division. Mm-hmm. Seattle's just a game back, so they have been playing really well. Arizona playing a little bit on the edge, nearly fell to St. Louis in a tough-to-watch game. unless you like defense, and if you like field goal kicking, then that was probably a little bit boring for you. But this game could be huge for Seattle. If they win out here, they could go into a home field advantage kind of situation, whereas Arizona could just kind of fall off and go into the playoffs lacking some momentum. Seattle has been playing well. You know, they kind of started off a little bit slow. You know, it wasn't a bad start per se, except that they were the defending champions. So mm-hmm. people are going to look at that and analyze it, and possibly overanalyze it to a fault. And now they're doing really well in the wild card spot, have played exceptionally well recently. And Arizona, meanwhile, has, you know, they're on their third string quarterback in Ryan Lindley. I'm going to be honest. I didn't really know who this guy was until the other night. I don't know if you can blame me for that, but if your quarterback is a third string guy like that, then and you're trying to go into the playoffs on his shoulders, this is not the team you want to face 2 weeks from going into the playoffs against Seattle's defense. I have to take Seattle in this one.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Seahawks as well. I mean, it's kind of crazy. So the Cardinals can clinch the NFC West, a first round playoff bye, and home field advantage throughout the playoffs with a win. But I think that the Seahawks just look too much like they did last season in the way they're playing right now. You know, they're riding a 4-game win streak and just really firing on all cylinders. And I can't see this Arizona offense or defense really stop them. So I got to pick the Seahawks in this one. I think they're pretty desperate to get that division title and get in the playoffs.
The Cardinals are at home here, but it wasn't like that played much of a role. When they faced the Chiefs recently, the Chiefs went up early in that game, got a couple touchdowns, and they were leading for most of the game until like the last quarter. Just an ineffective offense in both of those recent games.
And that was with Drew Stanton.
Yeah,
but we've also seen weird things happen in the Big Toaster. You know, strange things have happened all year. John Brown has been the savior a couple times on just sort of, you know, crazy late fourth quarter plays. The challenge that we talked about last week from Bruce Arians pulled through, or 2 weeks ago against the Chiefs. Weird things just seem to happen for them, but it's hard to see them doing anything in this game. I mean, Ryan Lindley, he played, I believe it was last season, kind of on and off in Wisenhunt's offense and was just a turnover machine. And since the Seahawks got Bobby Wagner back from injury, Cam Chancellor back from injury, a few other role players, they've been terrifying on defense once again, and I just can't see them scoring any points, Arizona. Frankly, it could be a shutout quite easily. It was a 19-3 game a couple weeks ago in Seattle. Again, this one's in Arizona, but instead of Drew Stanton at quarterback, it's Ryan Lindley.
And against the Chiefs, going back a couple weeks here, but against the Chiefs, you can have a bigger margin of error against Kansas City. They had a couple field goals bounce off the uprights, a couple red zone mistakes.
Some dropped interceptions.
Right. Against Seattle, you can't really afford to have many errors, many missed turnovers like that. You have to play a pretty exact game against Seattle if you want to come away with a win, especially in this time of the season when they're starting to tighten up their bolts, getting ready for the playoffs.
Yeah, and they sort of smell blood in the water right now. It looked like home field advantage was going to slip away from Seattle. Like you said, they have a chance. If they win out, the only team that can beat them to home field advantage is, believe it or not, Dallas. Dallas would have to win its final two games against the Colts and then the Redskins. So it's hard to see the Seahawks not gearing up for this one and dominating.
Pretty weird NFC kind of positioning there towards the end of the season. Home field could kind of go to Dallas, kind of surprisingly. I mean, Green Bay has been putting themselves in a great position going forward, but their loss to the Bills means that there is a chance that they're not even there.
I mean, it's hard to believe. I mean, it's so the ups and downs of these of this season has just been crazy. Like, remember going into the season, everyone thought that Dallas's defense was going to be maybe the worst ever.
Yeah.
And I mean, look at them now, they've made it work. And I mean, look at the Seahawks earlier this season. I mean, we were just talking about it this morning. It looked like that team had some serious holes and serious problems. And look at them now, two teams that both have good chances of, you know, getting home field advantage in the playoffs.
One last note. If something weird happens this weekend in the Big Toaster, we've talked about it, maybe Brett Favre makes his return. Who knows?
You know, it's always good to see the old gunslinger coming back. Just kind of go out for one more season. You know, we saw him up on the big board when Peyton passed him for 509. He was looking sharp in his muscle shirt, I think.
Yep, best shape of his life by all accounts. Every year he gets in better shape.
He's going to be out there. He's going to be looking like a beef tank if you follow the SB Nation Breaking Madden. So, unstoppable force, I'm sure. I don't know why Arizona hasn't given him a ring yet. And with that, we're going to go ahead and turn to our Broncos coverage. Andrew Mason is going to join us and discuss last week's AFC West clinching game against the Chargers. And later on, we'll talk about the upcoming Monday night football game against Cincinnati in the Bengals jungle.
It's everybody, man. Just knowing where each other going to be, and we could be a little more discreet with our calls so quarterback don't pick up our calls and things like that, because we kind of know where each other going to be. So it helps out everybody, man, everybody on the defense.
All right. Thank you, Mace, for joining us. The Broncos continue winning ways with a 22-10 division-clinching win over the Chargers in San Diego. Scoring was led by none other than Connor Barth, who once again tied the team's franchise record for most field goals completed in a game with 5. He looked pretty good. I thought, you know, 50-yard field goal was one that put them up by two possessions, I think, late in the game. Couple of turnovers late in the game finished that one off. Aqib Talib, AFC Defensive Player of the Week, and Raheem Moore combining for those two picks to close the door on the Chargers. But obviously, I think the biggest impact here comes from the two huge injuries with both Danny Trevathan in his first game back, how crushing, and obviously Brandon Marshall.
Yeah, and like you always have that one position group every year without fail that's going to get an unusual run of injuries, and this year it happens to be a linebacker, and you know, you have those injuries on top of losing Nate Irving, who you know, was the starting middle linebacker the first half of the season, but also was working as a linebacker in the nickel package next to Brandon Marshall for a while. And really now, if you know, you've already tested your depth. We've seen at, you know, when the Broncos go into nickel, we've seen T.J. Ward having move up from safety to one of those linebacker spots. And, you know, they started the San Diego game getting away from that, letting Brandon Marshall and Danny Trevathan work together. And then, you know, once you had injuries, he had to go back to that. And, you know, the domino effect back at safety is you've lost Quentin Carter for the season to a knee injury. So, you know, now it's David Bruton and not a lot of experience, you know, behind them at safety. But to go to the linebacker position, you know, was just watching the start of practice on Friday, and thought to my and I was talking with one of the Broncos PR staffers, and we noted that they had the weak side linebackers and the middle linebackers working together. There were four guys out there, and only one of them wasn't a rookie, and that was Steven Johnson. He's a third-year guy who just got pushed in the starting lineup last month after Nate Irving's injury. So really not a lot of experience there. I mean, you've got the three rookies, Corey Nelson, Lamin Barrow, and Todd Davis. You know, Davis just arrived in November as a waiver claim from New Orleans, but it looks like he's going to be the guy that gets the most play of those three. You know, they like what they've seen out of him. He has some similar attributes to Trevathan and Marshall, particularly in his sideline-to-sideline pursuit. But he's still a guy who's never started before, undrafted rookie, unproven, still learning the defense, still learning the game at this level. So a lot's going to be riding on him on Monday night.
For the action that he got on Sunday, was there anything that stood out? I was reading your article on Chris Harris after he got his contract extension. About when he first started out playing, you kind of jotted down your notebook a little, you know, this guy's promising. I like his future. Did you see anything in Todd Davis?
I saw one play. It was a run to the Chargers' left side, to, as Davis would view it, to his right. He and T.J. Ward, and T.J. Ward, you know he's very good at coming from the back end and making plays against the run. And I saw the same kind of speed and decisiveness from Todd Davis getting over there and helping T.J. make the play, as I see from T.J. Ward. That was a positive sign. Now, on the flip side, they're going to try to use his inexperience against him. And, you know, the Chargers had some success on the underneath routes from their running backs, not simply going out of the backfield into the flat, but delaying their route and then running a short cross. And there was one play where you had a Malcolm Floyd kind of go in one direction and draw the coverage over and kind of draw Davis's attention, and then the running back came on a cross underneath. And Davis didn't really react to that. That's the kind of thing he's going to have to work on. And that's, part of the challenge of being a weak side linebacker or one of the two linebackers in the nickel package is you've got to be able to read those plays and you've got to be able to kind of not get caught up covering one, kind of to know that someone else has got him. Like, to know that, like, when Floyd was coming across, someone else is going to take care of him and your responsibility is going to be the running back on that short cross. So there's things he's got to learn, but at the same time, like I said, I love the speed that he gets to the sideline with. I mean, and what I want to see next, and I think what the Broncos want to see is the same kind of thump against the run in the base package that Brandon Marshall showed. I mean, as a weak side linebacker, he's pretty good in coverage. That's what you expect from a weak side backer. But the thing I love about Brandon Marshall is that he goes into that gap and he fills it and he prevents almost every run from reaching the second level. Will Todd Davis be as authoritative in how he fills that gap as Brandon Marshall has been? I think that's going to determine his success, especially going forward against a Bengals team that's going to want to establish the run, and we'll get into that in a bit.
One of the things that Terrence Knighton kind of discussed on Thursday, football Wednesday, but Thursday, is that everyone else is going to have to step up. It's not just going to be the linebackers who have to step up, which is kind of obvious. These guys are young guys. They're going to have bigger roles, so clearly. But everyone else is going to have to be a more cohesive unit.
And Knighton, I think it's good that he mentions that in particular because he had a good game in San Diego getting inside on penetration. He got inside, but he didn't necessarily finish off a lot of those penetrations. He was getting into the backfield, but he wasn't always bringing the guy down. I think that's what he's trying to challenge himself and the other guys on the, Sylvester Williams on the interior and then guys like Derek Wolfe working at defensive end in the base package, challenge them to not just get penetration off the snap, but also to make plays before they get to the linebackers.
As far as this Chargers game, this team's had some problems with the road. Those have kind of been a little bit alleviated, I would say, in these past few weeks. They've won convincingly, and this game was no different in the end result, but they faced a little bit more adversity with Peyton Manning's illness.
Mm-hmm.
They had some red zone issues still, though. Do those concern you much?
Red zone's still an issue, and that and that's, I think I would start with that, just because, I mean, yeah, it's a good thing that Connor Barth's being able to clean up, you know, what's been left over with 2 5-for-5 games in 3 weeks, but you know, at some point they're gonna have to turn those into touchdowns. And what was interesting, you know, some of the red zone struggles, even going back to the Miami game, when they put 39 on the board, but were not as efficient as they would have liked to have been in the red zone. You could attribute some of that to the loss of Julius Thomas. Well, they had Julius Thomas back, you know, back on Sunday in San Diego, but didn't necessarily get the same kind of production. Although that being said, I think, you know, going in, kind of the game plan seems to have been to kind of ease Julius Thomas back into it. But once Ryan Clady went down and Chris Clark, who was filling in for Paul Kornick as the sixth O-lineman, had to go inside, that and with Jacob Tammy also down, that meant you had to use Julius Thomas a lot more in blocking type situations, and that's not necessarily his forte. So I think it was, you know, kind of a little bit of a square peg in a round hole thing, just because of personnel issues. If the Broncos are back to full strength, at least with having Ryan Clady back, and you know, he did practice, he was out there for practice on Thursday as the week began, and you know, it would surprise me, knowing Ryan Clady, if he doesn't play. If they're back to full strength, then I think they'll use Julius Thomas a bit more judiciously, and when he's out there, will be running routes and not as a blocker. But yeah, it was, you know, it was disappointing, certainly for the Broncos, to see the struggles in the red zone. The other thing, you know, they're still emphasizing the run, and you had Julius Thomas out there, and we know that he's not the blocker that, say, Virgil Green is at tight end. And you get down, particularly in short yardage, like they had at the end of the second quarter, and you know, that offensive line group, you know, without Ryan Clady, it's not getting the same kind of push as you would have liked it to. So I think that had an impact as well. It was, you know, losing Clady eliminates a lot of power from that left flank, and really makes it really difficult to get the same kind of push off the snap for the entire offensive line when you don't have your all-pro left tackle out there. So it did, you know, those things did make a difference. But if the Broncos are back to full strength, I think they can have more success against a Bengals defense that has frankly struggled at times this year, even though they had the shutout last week.
And even despite Clady's absence, they still ran the ball at a season-high level. I think it was something like 63% of their offensive plays were runs. And meanwhile, as John Fox emphasized emphatically earlier last week, is that there's nothing wrong with their pass game, and they had one of their most efficient passing games that they've had in recent history.
Yes, in terms of yards per attempt, I mean, Peyton Manning, he's had, you know, a couple of his best games as a Bronco have come this season, and the only game that was better in terms of yards per attempt for Manning as a Bronco was the game against San Francisco back in October. So they're taking their deep shots and they're maximizing them. And part of, you know, we know that Peyton Manning is very good at identifying coverage off the snap and identifying what he perceives to be a mismatch. And you know, when he's got Demaryius Thomas or Emmanuel Sanders on the outside in single, that's what he wants. I mean, he'll take that chance, A, because he is willing to drop it into tight coverage, and B, Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders are so good at adjusting to the ball in flight. So even if there's, you know, not a lot of zip on the football, and you saw them both kind of come back for passes. And then you had the other play to Julius Thomas when he did get outside on a go route up the right sideline. And, you know, there's no separation, but that ball just drops in and Julius makes the play. That's kind of the quintessential Peyton Manning, Julius Thomas pass, really, is, you know, being able to have that kind of deep connection without any separation, because, you know, Julius Thomas is a good athlete, but also because, you know, Peyton Manning has that kind of trust to where, you know, that frankly it takes a while for a lot of quarterbacks in this league to learn that you don't have that kind of separation and you've got to drop it into tight spaces. So those indications are positive. You know, a good stat from the San Diego game was that Manning had one more yard than Phillip Rivers in 21 fewer attempts. That's a pretty efficient passing game. There were no turnover. There were no interceptions in the passing game. That was a good sign after a couple of picks the week before against Buffalo. and certainly showed signs of returning to what it had been. Now, I think maybe the days of constant 400-yard games for the passing game are probably in the rearview window just because of the current distribution of run versus pass. But if they can have efficient play like that, if they can, if they're getting over 10 yards every time they do choose to pass, they do choose to pass the ball, then they're going to be pretty happy.
That win obviously gave the Broncos a postseason spot, winning the division. This coming week, they could possibly clinch a first-round bye. They will head to Cincinnati to play the Bengals on the road on Monday Night Football.
Yes, and they will know going into the Bengals game if they can get that bye. Obviously, so you know we'll see what they come up with. Indianapolis is still right there, breathing on their heels, but. What helps the Broncos going in is that they've got the head-to-head tiebreaker, and there's a back way for the Broncos to get a bye. They can still get a bye with one loss over the next two games. They can even get a bye with two losses if the situation works out right. They would need some help. They would need an Indianapolis loss, and they would need.
I would be a bit more concerned that the second loss would be to the Raiders.
that would be kind of shocking, but at the same time, just saying, let's say you've got a lot of injuries that are, and you lose to the, by chance, you lose both games going in, and then you still get that off week, it would still help you a bit. But yes, I think if the Broncos lost to the Raiders in week 17, the panic in this town would be at a little more than a low sweat stage.
Yeah, every team we play against, I expect them to try to run the ball. I don't expect them to be successful, but, you know, I expect them to attempt to. You know, they got two backs back there that are really good, a big back and then a scat back that can give you trouble. You know, and they do a lot of different things. They got, you know, receivers that can throw the ball. You know, they probably got one of the best receivers in the league, you know, in A.J. Green. So, you know, they'll do as much as they can to take the pressure off him because our secondary is not giving up much at all.
Now, Monday night's game will be definitely an exciting one. Cincinnati comes in. They're leading the AFC North. A very tight division up there. The Browns kind of, are the caboose there, 7-7. But each of those teams are right there with 9 wins. Because of that tie game to the Panthers, the Bengals do lead it by a half game. Right now, they're playing pretty well. Their only loss in the past 5 games was a 42-21 stinker. But they
to Pittsburgh,
back.
Who they actually have to turn around and face in week 17. And now Pittsburgh, you don't know what you're going to get from them week to week. We've seen them look like the best team in football at times this year. We've seen them, I like your word stinker. They've had stinkers against New Orleans and Tampa Bay at home.
And Cleveland.
Yes. So they've, they're capable of laying eggs, but at the same time, they dominated the Bengals so thoroughly when they met at Paul Brown Stadium a few weeks ago that if you're Cincinnati, frankly, you're kind of thinking of this Bronco game as almost a must win. And certainly, Pittsburgh has a tough game against Kansas City on Sunday. But if you're the Bengals, you really need to find a way to get it done against Denver, because Pittsburgh may just be a team that's a bad matchup for them, particularly because you saw that Pittsburgh put up 42 points on the Bengals, and we'll get into this more. The Bengals cornerbacks have struggled, and frankly, you have a guy like Terrence Newman, who finally, after all these years, is looking his age, and Pittsburgh, so strong on the go route, so strong on the outside that the Bengals couldn't cope with that. And I think if Cincinnati, it would help them obviously if Pittsburgh lost to Kansas City. But if Cincinnati goes to Pittsburgh needing that game in order to get to the postseason, that'd be tough sledding for them. So they've got an awful lot of on the line. They know they need to get on Monday against Denver.
Now the Broncos will be coming into this game on a 4-game win streak. They'll be trying to get a little bit healthier, trying to incorporate Julius Thomas a little bit more into that offensive passing game. The defense, meanwhile, will be trying to account for some losses in the linebacking core. Do you see this as a game with Cincinnati having a two running back tandem there with Gio Bernard and Hill? Do you think that's something they'll try and emphasize, the running game against this Broncos defense?
I'd be shocked if they didn't. And it's not just because of where the Broncos defense stands in terms of the health of the linebackers and looking at starting a rookie on at the crucial weak side spot.
But you also have the Bengals coming off their best rushing game in the whole season.
And they've been running. Yeah, and this is not like a one-week thing. That you go back to, really, frankly, mid-season, and especially since Jeremy Hill went into the starting lineup. You know, he's a very nice speed power blend. He can make guys miss in the open field. He's had at least 148 rushing yards in three of the last seven games. Very tough to contain. Will plow through a tackler. You've got to have good form tackling to bring down Jeremy Hill. That's the big challenge for Steven Johnson and Todd Davis at the linebacker spots, is they're going to have to make sure they wrap up and don't let him get to the second level, because when he does, that's where you're going to really run into some problems. But Cincinnati's offense does flow from the run. When they do, obviously you've got AJ Green on the outside. We know he's a premium target. Everyone, has known about him for some time. He was hurt earlier this year. He's back in form, doing what he always does. But they're going to use the run to set up the pass. They want to force the defense out of opportunities to tee off on Andy Dalton when he throws. So you want to have the run that sets up the play action and sets up one-on-ones with a cornerback against AJ Green, because that's something that they're going to try to take all night long.
Tlaib was saying on Thursday that the thing he notices most about Cincinnati's offense is the timing. And obviously, if you let him get into that timing, they're going to perform better than, if they get one-dimensional and you let those defensive ends, you let Ware and you let Miller get back to just rushing straight at the quarterback, and getting him uncomfortable can really take them out of their offensive flow.
And when he's uncomfortable, as we've seen this year, he's been bad, and he makes mistakes. Bengals have 21 turnovers this year. They've got in their 9 wins, 10 turnovers. In their 4 losses and 1 tie, they've got 11 turnovers. I mean, the correlation's pretty clear that when you get pressure on Andy Dalton and you force a mistake, then that's when you're going to kind of put the Bengals ill at ease. And whether there's something in the Bengals primetime struggles, whether it's just a coincidence or there's actually something,
I think
there,
it's small sample size.
Yeah,
but
the Cleveland game was a disaster. New England, I can say, look, the Patriots, that was the week, that was right after the Kansas City game when everyone was kind of picking at the Patriots and starting to say, oh, Tom Brady's done this, that, and all other absurdities. So that was kind of a bad time to catch New England, but the Cleveland game was a mess for Cincinnati. And you do wonder maybe if you can put pressure on them, and then maybe they're going to put mental pressure on themselves. And this is where, if you're the Broncos defense, I think you come right out and, if you can get them into third down, get them into 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, to where they're passing the ball, and get them into a situation where you can tee off and you can attack with a pass rush, that's where you can really, really break them down. And I think, frankly, kind of, force them and even take the crowd out of it, because that's going to be a very fidgety, nervous crowd. And if the Broncos force a takeaway or two early from Cincinnati, then I think, frankly, that home field advantage may well become a home field disadvantage because of the air of discomfort. I think you're gonna sense in the Bengal fans. I think that's going to feed down to the players as well.
And you talk about third downs. That is so key for this defense. I think they lead the league in 3 and outs that they forced. Mm-hmm. When they get teams facing, those unmanageable third downs, they're exceptional. We see them against Kansas City, against San Diego. When the other teams have to pass, that's when the pass rushers really seem to to lock in on the quarterbacks.
And third down is an area in which the Bengals have improved since that Thursday night meltdown against Cleveland. In four of the last five games, they've converted at least 45% of their third downs. Actually converted 69% of them against New Orleans right after going 3 of 17 on third downs against Cleveland. So they've really cleaned up that area of the offense. So it's going to be kind of a strength versus strength situation, I think, for when the Broncos' third down defense goes against the Bengals' third down offense. And the other thing, if you look at some of the Bengals' losses and their third down performance, 0-7 at New England, 1-13 at Indianapolis, 3-17 at home against Cleveland, 3-11 against Pittsburgh, and those are the four losses. So clearly, if you get the Bengals into a bad place on third down, you've got them right where you want them.
And then that sets you up for field position more likely than not. And against the Bengals, who are pretty good with goal to go in that red zone area, that's something that could be really key if you want to keep that. If you want to keep their points below 17, mm-hmm. like the defense has said, that's what they try to do to every team.
Yeah, and that's where the focus goes back to Jeremy Hill and finding ways to contain him, because you know he does, like I said, he does make guys miss in the open field, but he's got a nice blend of power to go with that speed.
And then obviously coming into this game, a couple of the biggest things that came out of practice this week, for better or for worse, is injuries to Peyton Manning, who left practice on Thursday, of course, during the media period.
when you've got to go get treatment, you've got to go get treatment. You can't
where
necessarily,
everyone can see you.
Yes, exactly. But he said after practice that he was feeling okay and he was back out there for practice on Friday. So
I think we'll see him upgraded to full.
Yeah, and the other thing, I look back to last year. I mean, Manning basically was playing most of last year on two bum ankles that he got hurt. And
well, there's that famous photo of him, you know, with his helmet on.
Right,
he's got
the iPad. He's sitting in the tub. He's got his helmet. He's the helmet, so he can listen to the play calls through the radio receiver in his helmet and watch it kind of all as close to real time as possible. That's, you know, but is anyone surprised that would be how Peyton Manning would spend practice? That's
of course
just,
not.
That's how he is. And
yeah.
So you know, last year for several weeks didn't practice at all on Wednesdays and was good to go and ended up setting, you know, all sorts of records last year. So it would take an awful lot of discomfort and pain for Manning not play in Cincinnati. I think he'll be good to go.
And obviously the other big injury on the offensive line, the focus is on Ryan Clady, who has been a huge part of the offense getting the ground game going. Looks like he's going to be ready for this game on Monday.
Looking that way, he was limited in practice on Thursday, but you know he's looking pretty good so far. It would surprise me if he doesn't play again. Same thing with Peyton Manning; would take an awful lot for him not to play. Now you know they had again.
If
they
he
had,
doesn't,
they had Chris Clark, and I imagine Chris Clark would go back to being left tackle if something happens to Ryan Clady in the game like it was in San Diego. But you know, as we talked about, that does affect the offensive line. It does affect the blocking scheme, because the Broncos have made such extensive use of the six offensive lineman formations, and also because they don't have Paul Kornick, who's dealing with a toe injury and has not practiced since the Buffalo game.
How viable a backup is Chris Clark?
Left side, he's he can be pretty good. And you go back to last year when he had to start from week three onward after Ryan Clady had the Lisfranc injury, and he was solid. The Broncos obviously tried him on the right side this past off season, early in the season. It didn't really work out. And you know, as Chris told me after the game Sunday, you know, left tackle is just the natural position for him. He's played it, you know, on the pro level, obviously last year, but he played at Southern Mississippi. He played in high school, and even though right tackle is perceived by many outsiders as the easier of the two tackle spots because you're not working on what is usually the quarterback's blind side, it's tough. I mean, you can't necessarily be a good left tackle and then be a good right tackle, because you've got basically everything you do in terms of your motions, everything you do off the snap, you've got to mirror it. You've got to take what you do with your left hand and then do it with your right hand. Take what you do with your left foot and do it with your right foot. Not every guy can grasp that. That's pretty tough. When you find, you know, it, the there's a more extensive list of guys who could not make that transition, like Chris Clark, than guys who could make that transition. So, you know, he's actually in a more natural position for him playing on the left side.
That game will be on Monday night, obviously, 8:30 Eastern, 6:30 Mountain. We'll see how the Bengals defense holds up against a quarterback who isn't Johnny Football. I think Peyton Manning might get more than 80 yards. We'll see how that game turns out. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time after the game as we look forward to the Week 17 regular season finale against the Raiders.
Denver is a defensive city. You know, they want to see great defense. You know, we have a prolific quarterback, prolific offense, but, you know, we fell short with that last year. We know that defense wins championships, and that's the blueprint we're going by.
I think we're playing at a championship level. You know, it's a few things that we all need to fix. You know, I know me personally, that I want to work on, help this team win. So I think we're heading in that right direction. But really, though, man, our practicing has been crisp. Our camaraderie, us in meetings, our intent, we're understanding the system even more, we're understanding who we are and our roles on the team. Whether you're first string guys, second string, special teams, everybody knows their role and they're doing a good job at that.
They're playing well as a unit. You know, obviously, I think all defenses kind of start up front, you know, the ability to stop the run, certainly to put pressure on the quarterback in the passing game. That helps the linebackers. You know, that helps the secondary. And, you know, anytime they've created turnovers, you know, recently, I think it's probably been the biggest difference. Early on, turnovers weren't, you know, happening quite as much. But, you know, I've heard Coach Del Rio stress, you know, turnovers do come in bunches, and that has proven to be true. And the defense has stepped up and created some turnovers at some critical times. And that certainly helped the whole team, especially when you're playing teams that have a lot on the line. And this division is... I think all three teams are right in the middle of it, and this game, you know, means a lot to us, but it means a lot to them as well. They're playing at home, Monday Night Football, you know, the great atmosphere. So, yeah, I definitely would think it's going to be rocking down there, and both teams, you know, have a lot on the line.